Blogs and the Bench. This is Future Tense from American Public Media. I'm Marisa Helms, in for John Gordon. The hundreds of legal blogs on the web range from a day in the life of a lawyer to scholarly legal research. Recent law school grad and legal blog taxonomer Ian Best from Ohio says he has found 27 cases where judges have cited legal blogs in their rulings.
One of those citations is from the U.S. Supreme Court itself when they made another major sentencing decision called United States v. Booker. It was in a dissenting opinion by Justice Stevens, and it was only to a document on the blog. It wasn't to the content of the blog itself. But still, that was the very first time the U.S. Supreme Court has ever cited a blog. That was in January 2005.
Are judges concerned about the longevity of a citation on a blog? Blogs come and go.
I think that's a legitimate concern. One of the reasons I started paying attention to it and even writing about it on my own blog was, in a sense, to reassure people, judges or lawyers, what have you, that there is a growing legitimacy to this new technology and to this new form of publishing, that blogs have a validity as authority and as a resource. But blogs can come and go. They can go defunct. They can also be continuously updated, so there would be a danger if a judge cited a blog post and then the blogger, the person in charge of that post, decided to change it. You know, they could actually change the content. Now, I think the blogs that are being cited by court opinion are run by professionals who would not do that, who would not let it go defunct, and who would not change the content.
I was just thinking about the advantage of legal blogs for judges and lawyers. Legal journals can take months before they come out with analysis on a particular case. So the advantage would be that a web blog could do that much faster.
Right. A law review article on a Supreme Court case, by the time it comes out, there's a potential it could be outdated, or it could be of little use to people in the real legal world who are practicing, who are defending clients or who are prosecuting cases. So a blog has that advantage, obviously, over traditional legal publishing. With the new technology, people can do very different things, very creative things. They can have a blog about a particular case, about a particular subspecialty in the legal world. They can have a very eclectic blog where they talk about a number of things. So I think there's allowance of a lot more ingenuity. There's sort of a way of getting around the traditional form of publication.
According to Best's legal blog taxonomy on his webpage, 3L Epiphany, one of the most often cited blogs is Sentencing Law and Policy, created by Doug Berman, a law professor at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University. Judges cited the Sentencing Law and Policy blog 24 times in 19 cases, including the U.S. Supreme Court case. Blogger Berman says he's a little surprised how often he's being cited.
I think there's understandably a significant reservation, given the sort of history of blogs and the uncertainty about online materials in general, a reservation to use it as an authoritative source. But I think it's been an aspect of my own decision and commitment to keep the blog sort of very on topic. So I'm not talking about what I had for breakfast that much, and I'm not distracting the reader with a bunch of less pertinent materials, and I think that may create for judges a comfort level of treating my blog and citing to my blog as an authority that's on par with what you might find in traditional print or other sort of more expected legal sources.
You talk about what you had for breakfast, not that much, you say.
That's right. I mean, I occasionally will, mention that there's a big sporting event, or I often try to use the medium in a not too somber way.
Berman says he hopes over time there may be a way to archive aspects of legal blogs that deserve a longer life. This is Future Tense. I'm Marisa Helms.